My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
I'm going to close this. My sobriety date is February 25th, 2004. My home group is the Tampa Bay Speakers Group. We meet every Sunday at Yana at 7:30. And what else? I have a sponsor. I'm available to sponsor others. So, let's see. Well, I grew up in Northern Virginia, and I don't have any horror stories from my childhood. It's pretty normal, from what I could tell. I have an older brother. He's a police officer. My parents are still married. They all live relatively normal lives. My dad, he tells a story. He got drunk at his bachelor party and threw up on the guy's parents' bed who was hosting the bachelor party. He's never really drank since. I think he's had like a glass of wine maybe now and then. And by now and then, I mean like every few years. So basically alcoholism doesn't really run in my family at all. So for me, like I'm the only one. I'm the lucky one, I guess. But I could tell you that, like a lot of people say in Alcoholics Anonymous, from a very early age, I didn't fit in anywhere. And I was a weird kid. I mean, I'll be honest with you. You know, I was socially awkward, to put it nicely. And so I don't really think alcoholism had a lot to play with it. I think it was just that I was a weird kid. But I remember from sixth grade till practically the day I graduated high school, I was made fun of every single day I went to school. Like, I love all those anti-bullying campaigns that they have now. They could have used you about 20 years ago, but... That's not why I'm an alcoholic either, but, you know, I know that when I graduated high school, I was completely miserable, you know, and... I remember just making a conscious decision, like, you're going to go to college, and your life is going to change when you get to college. It has to. It can't stay like it is now, because you're not going to make it. Like, I wasn't going to make it, you know. And I had a drink when I was 14, and I didn't start drinking alcoholically. I think when I was 19 and I graduated from high school, I started drinking pretty regularly at that point, almost immediately, and... What happened was I got in a really bad car accident when I was 19, and I got pretty badly injured. It was more blood than anything else, but it looked really bad. And we've crashed a car in this guy's front yard, and so the guy comes out at 3 o'clock in the morning, hands me a phone. He's like, well, you better call your folks to let them know what's happening. So I call my parents, and my dad actually got to the accident scene as I was getting loaded in the ambulance. So he actually rode with me to the hospital in the ambulance. And I'm in complete shock, freaking out, because there's blood everywhere. He doesn't handle blood very well, so he's kind of freaking out. You know, I'm swearing up and down I'm never going to drink again. You know, he's just like, what is going on? You know, they didn't even know I'd ever drank, you know. And he's like, wow, this is like a side of you we didn't even know existed, you know. And I swear I was never going to drink again. And that was in probably June. By August, I was in college on my own for the first time ever, away from my parents. A week into college, I was drunk, you know, and I met up with some, I made some friends very, very quickly in college who drank a lot, and so I just mooched off them. I was like a parasite, basically. You had booze, you talked to me, I hung out with you nonstop, and I was at their place all the time just sucking up that booze, you know, as much as I could get, never paying for it, never even contributing any, actually, because I wasn't even of age. I couldn't buy any, and, it worked for a little while. You know, those guys, they were fun. We were like weekend warriors. We would drink probably Friday, Saturday, maybe a Sunday now and then, but that was really it, and those guys had this weird rule where you couldn't drink before 10 o'clock at night, which is really odd. But we'd be sitting around with the booze, like the beers and everything ready, waiting for the clock to turn to 10, and then crack it and drink as much as you can until you pass out drunk. I don't really understand what that was about, and it certainly wasn't any kind of standard that I was setting. It was more like something they decided. But anyways, you know, 2 years into that, beginning of my junior year, they're like, look, dude, you're cool. We like it when you're sober, but when you're drunk, you're way out of control, and we don't want anything to do with you anymore. You know, like, because I was the kind of guy, like, I had a girlfriend, like, right when I got to college, and Friday would roll around, I'd take her out on a date, come back from the date, hang with my buddies at 10 o'clock, drank until they threw me out, go down, go to bed, wet the bed, wake her up, convince her she wet the bed, tell her to change the sheets, stand there chastising her for wetting the bed while she's changing the sheets, and then get back in the bed and pass out drunk. That's the kind of catch I was, you know. And, you know, that happened on several occasions to the point where we had to flip the mat. You know, you flip the mattress because the stain's getting too big. You know, it's just a great catch, you know. And I dumped her, and the same day I met another girl, started dating her. From the age of 19 to 25, I was in a relationship. And that girl I met, the second girl, because by the time these guys were like, we're done with you, she came into my life, and she drank like I did. You know, and I was like, cool, party just continues, you know, from one party to the next. And, you know, we got rolling, and she was a year ahead of me in school, so she graduated from college, and she got into Stetson Law School, so she moved down here to Florida, which is how I ended up down here, because like any good boyfriend, I proposed right before she left so that she wouldn't find a decent person down here. And I proposed, she said yes, she moved down here. I had a nervous breakdown, left college, moved home with my parents, drank too much, finished up college at home, moved down here after her, and moved into this little, I think they call them bungalows, and Gulfport, which, like, I you all know it's like a good side of Gulfport and a bad side of Gulfport. Like, this was on the bad side of Gulfport, and it was a little one, like, it was a one-bedroom house with no central air conditioning. And I moved here in May. So, like, I moved to Florida and then right at the beginning of the summer into a house with no central AC. And I brought my college dorm refrigerator, and I had an Easy Boy chair, and I popped that little refrigerator next to my little Easy Boy chair, and I'd sit there and just crack beers. And she's going to law school, and here I am, let's keep the party going, you know. And we'd have these conversations about my alcoholism. I mean, we didn't call it that, but because she was like a big proponent of not calling it alcoholism. She was just like, you need to get this thing under control. Though we didn't say what this thing was, but so anyways, you know, long story short, she goes to law school, she gets her life together, she pretty much stops drinking altogether. I think the party should keep going, you know. I'm like, I don't understand why we need to stop partying. We're in Florida, the beach is right there. Like, what other excuse do you need to party? It's like, this is awesome. And I got a job at a hotel with a bar in it. You know, we didn't have anything like that in Virginia. Like, there was no such thing as a hotel bar in Virginia. And I knew the bartender, and I could just get right off work at 11 o'clock, walk over to the bar, get free drinks, get wasted. You know, my girl would come up and dance by herself on a dance floor, and I'd just be sitting there doing that little bar trivia, drinking, just getting wasted. And you know, driving home drunk every single night in a blackout. I remember setting the standard, like, I'm never gonna drive drunk. And I was like, well, let's not get crazy. You have to get home, right? So then I was like, I'm never gonna drive drunk with my girl in the car. And I was like, well, the last time I did that, she didn't even really care, right? So then I was like, I'm never gonna drive drunk in a blackout with my girl in the car. And then I was like, well, she didn't even know I was in a blackout. So, what's the big deal, you know? And as I just did, that bar just kept falling further and further and further. It was like, and then I'd be counting the times I drank and I didn't black out. Like, well, this time I didn't black out. Must be doing pretty good, you know? And the next week I'd black out. I'd be like, damn, I went 7 days without blacking out, you know? And, you know, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And by the end of that summer, I ended up getting arrested. I got a DUI. And, you know, and I thought that was the end of the world. I was like, oh, man. You know, I had these big career ambitions. I was like, well, none of that's going to happen now. I got this DUI. You know, no one's going to hire me. You know, it's not quite that bad. But, you know, my fiance at the time got paid for my lawyer out of her own pocket so I could beat the charges. And I got off relatively easy. And, you know, but at that point, she was like, look, we got to do something about this. You know, and first I went to church, and, you know, because that's what my parents do. When something is going wrong in their life, they go to church, talk to the minister about it, they work it out somehow, and everything's okay. You know, it's like, that must be how you deal with it, you know? So I went to the church, talked to his minister, and he's like, well, just go home and pray, and everything will be fine. I'm like, all right, cool. So I went home and prayed, and like a week later, I go back to the minister, I was like, man, I want to drink more than ever. He's like, well, I wouldn't do that. I'm like, yeah, I think you're right, but what do I do? And he's like, well, let's go home and pray and everything will be fine. Go back a week later. He's like, man, I want to drink like you wouldn't believe. He's like, well, when you drink, bad things seem to happen, so don't do that. And I was like, all right, man, I got you. What do I do? He's like, go home and pray. I'm like, all right. I did that for like a month. At the end of that month, man, I was ready to kill him, you know? I remember driving down the road just like it was yesterday. I remember, and I just thought, all I'm going to do is buy me a gun, and I'm going to go and shoot that man. And then I'm going to go home, and I'm going to shoot my fiance because she won't get off my back. And then I'm going to go and shoot myself. And then just, that'll be it, you know? Problem solved. And then it was like, that was one thought. And then the next thought was, listen, you lunatic. Why don't you go to Alcoholics Anonymous and try and give that another shot? Because I've been to meetings before, you know? I went to meetings. Hell, I've been drinking like a year, and people told me I should go to meetings. And I'd go to them and judge everybody in the room and walk out, you know, and be like, well, I'm glad they have meetings. They definitely need it, but I don't. You know, and then my life would fall apart, and I'd go back again. And my life would fall apart, and I'd go back again. And it's just like, well, just try this one more time. So I went, you know, and I got 12-stepped at that meeting. A guy told me about the Pinellas Park Young People's Group, and you know, and I showed that. That was me. I used to go on down in St. Pete, and I showed up down there, and you know, and those guys were on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous, and they were doing it every single day. You know, they were out there in the trenches, and they were 12-step people, and they were working the steps, and they were talking about working the steps, and they were going to meetings every day, and they were doing service work, you know, and I got a sponsor, and he got me my first meeting. They had a business meeting, and this guy got elected to the coffee position, but he had no license and no car. So it was like no way he'd be able to get there. So my sponsor grabbed me and he goes, your service commitment is to make sure this guy gets to the meeting on time to make the coffee. So for like 6 months, that was my job, was to go pick this guy up, take him to the meeting, and watch him make coffee. And, you know, and it worked. It held me accountable, got me to that meeting, you know, and I started working the steps. My life got a lot better. Got a lot better, and it got a lot better really fast, you know. And a lot of great things happened to me. I got married, and I got into graduate school, and I got this really good job, and, you know, and I was rocking and rolling, and I was just feeling like on top of the world, man. And I remember, and we had moved out of that little place and moved into an apartment. We got a nice little two-bedroom apartment, and we were doing really good, you know, we were happy. And I remember driving home from going out to eat. Well, I should back up. What ended up happening was life got more important than Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And that's something I struggle with today, I'll be honest with you. It's tough. And, you know, what happened was, you know, I had to go to class at night, so I couldn't go to meetings on those nights. And then I had to go on a date night with my wife, so I couldn't go to meeting on that night. And then, you know, I was dwindling down, and it was one night a week, and then it just got inconvenient to even go then, you know. And I remember she turned to me one night, we were driving home, and she's like, when's the last time you talked to your sponsor? And I was like, what do you know about that, you know? You're not even an alcoholic. Take it easy. And she was like, well, when's the last time you went to a meeting? I was like, look, let's just stop with the attacks. You know, let's just calm down. Let's just calm down here. I don't need to do that stuff anymore. And she's like, well, look at all that's happened to you because of AA. And I remember, I'll never forget it, arrogant as all get out. And I said, I worked hard and got what I deserve. I deserve all this because I worked hard and I earned it. It has nothing to do with AA. It has nothing to do with my sponsor. It doesn't have anything to do with that or God or any of that, you know. And what that got me was drunk, you know. Not even 2 months later, I'm out drinking again. And, you know, and it was New Year's Eve and, you know, excuse after excuse after excuse. But, you know, end of the day, I got drunk. And I think I had 14 months sober. I thought I could just turn around and walk right back into the meetings and everything would be okay. And everyone would treat me the same and no one would look at me any different. And everything would be the same as it was the day before. And, you know, I'm here to tell you, that's not my experience. When I walk back into the rooms, people are like, whoa, that guy drank, you know. And they pat you on your shoulder and they're like, it's going to be okay, you know. Are you doing all right? Like, yeah, I'm doing fine. Like, the same people I was saying that to a week before are now saying that to me. And I was just like, man, you know, that was a tough pill to swallow. You know, it takes a, you know, it's tough. It ain't, for me, you know, it was hard on my ego. I'll be honest, it was tough to come back. And I didn't stay long. I went out big, and I decided, you know, I'm not alcoholic. That's not what's wrong with me. It's something else, and I'll just figure it out some other time. And so I just went ahead and went out and started drinking again. And I remember I left the meeting and I called up my wife and I was like, that's it, I'm going to start drinking. And she's like, well, what are you going to do now? And I was like, well, I think I'm going to stop for a six pack on the way home. And start. And she's like, that's not what I mean. Like, you know, and the next night we went out drinking and she had two drinks and she was ready to call a night. And I'm like, hey, you know, the party's just getting started. Why are we leaving? You know, and it just never clicked for me. And it never clicked for her. Like, she couldn't figure out why I was like that, and I couldn't figure out why she wasn't, you know. And that's just a bad combination. And eventually, you know, what happened was she left. She moved to Orlando and then moved back. And a funny little twist, she came back, and she's like, I think you should move out. And I was like, I think you should move out. And she's like, well, we're both on the lease. I was like, exactly. So pack it up. You know. Once again, a great catch, right? And she looked at me just like completely dumbfounded, and I don't even know what to say. And she just walked out of the room, and I was like, "That's it, I'm staying." And we lived together as ex-husband and ex-wife for like three, four months or something. And finally, the lease was up, and I moved to Tampa, and I got a little one-bedroom apartment, and I quickly made friends, quickly lost friends, and then, you know, and I remember just thinking, I can finally drink how I want to drink. Finally, after all this time, there's nobody here to bother me. There's nobody here to count my drinks. There's nobody here to tell me I'm drinking too much. There's nobody here. And there really wasn't. And that was it, you know. And I ended up getting two jobs. And I thought, because the one thing I never did, or very rarely, I guess I should say, I very rarely drank on the job or before work. I did leave work and drink and then not go back. I did that a lot, but I very rarely would drink before work. So what I did is I got two jobs. So I work like 12, 13 hours a day and then go home and drink and pass out drunk, you know? And so I had this job where I worked till close. So it was like midnight and I leave and I was like, you know, I want to get something to eat. And I drove to a couple grocery stores. None of them were open. I ended up at a restaurant. Walking to the restaurant, I just remember telling myself, like, you know, and I've been seeing this shrink, I should say. I've been seeing this psychiatrist, excuse me. And this guy would tell me, like, I would check in with him once a week, and he'd be like, so, how'd you do this week? And like, well, I went out to this restaurant and drank too much, blacked out, drove home drunk, you know, same old. And he's like, he'd get really mad and get real angry at me, like, you shouldn't do that. Stop doing that. I'm like, I hear you, man, you know, and all I... You know, and he was like, it's like he was my father. It's like I talk to my son now, like, stop doing that, you know. You're going to go to your room. And, you know, and what happened was I just remember, like, being at that restaurant and being like, I just don't want this guy to yell at me anymore. And I don't want to get in trouble again. And I just want my life to get better. And really, I really wanted that psychiatrist to tell me just go to AA. And I even asked him, I was like, do you think I should try AA? And he's like, nah, that's not for you. Nope. And then I thought maybe he'd give me some drugs. He never gave me any drugs. I was like, this really isn't working. Anyways, I'm at this restaurant, and I'm telling myself, don't drink because I don't want this guy to yell at me anymore. I don't know why I never lied to him. I just thought about that. But I'm telling myself as I walk up to the maitre d' lady, don't drink, don't drink, don't drink. And she's like, do you want a table? I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to sit at the bar. Because I was by myself, and I feel like a loser if I sat at a table by myself. And I was like, so I went up to the bar, and I sat down, and the first thing I did was order a drink. The whole time my mind is saying, it's just like it says in the book, there's no mental defense against the first drink. And that's exactly what happened. And, you know, cunning, baffling, and powerful. And I ordered a double, and I just drank, and I drank, and I drank, and then I blacked out. And well, what happened was I drank, and I went to the bathroom, and I was like, look, if you keep drinking, you're going to black out. Now's a good time to stop. You can still drive home. You can still be okay. Stop right now. And I sat back down. I even closed out the tab, put the receipt in my pocket, opened up another tab, and kept drinking. Unbelievable. Like, it's just no logic, you know. Looking at it now, it's completely illogical. And, you know, and I... got my car, drove home, passed out drunk. Woke up, and I remember opening my eyes, and it was real. It's that time between night and day where it's like really dark. And I remember thinking I was blind. And I was like, man, you're blind. And that's how I thought. Like, if I went blind right now, I would flip my mind. I'd be like, call 911, I am blind, stop everything. But at the time, I was like, man, your life sucks. You know? And it was like, on top, like, your life sucks, and now you're blind on top of everything else. Wow. You know, and that's how I handled it. It was just like another thing on the checklist, you know? And it's like, I just couldn't handle life, man. I was completely broken. That's the way I can describe it. Like, just feeling completely broken and not be able to handle life. And what happened was that I went and passed out. What happened was I went and passed out drunk. And then I woke up the next day with a horrible hangover. And I need to get honest. I used to tell a lot of people I didn't get hangovers. That's a complete lie. I got really awful hangovers that just destroyed me. And I came in the AA and I thought I'd be like this big man and be like, no, I never had hangovers. That sounds bad for you people who did, but I never had them. But boy, did I. Boy, did I. And I woke up, my head was pounding, my stomach was aching, and I just, the only thing that would cure that was a drink. And I was just like, I can't do it anymore. I remember saying out loud, like, God, take my life or change it. I just can't do this anymore, you know. And that voice came right back in my head again. It was like, just go back to AA and everything's going to be fine. And that's why I did. I showed up at Sobriety Club. It used to be up there off of Bears, I think. I went to a couple meetings there. And ended up here on a Thursday night, back at the old church. And, I was so unhappy. I was so miserable, you know. But I didn't even know else to go. And really, I thought I was going completely insane. I thought that if I kept drinking, alcoholic insanity would set in, and eventually I would just go completely insane, and there'd be no way to come back. So I was really scared, you know. It's like, but, you know, the last thing I wanted to do was hang out with this group of people. You know, I'll be totally honest. You know, they were very, very nice. They invited me places. And sometimes I went, and sometimes I didn't. But I remember one time they invited me over to this girl's house, and they were singing karaoke. And they were, like, screaming karaoke. And the guys were all out on the porch smoking cigarettes. And I just remember thinking, this is about as lame as it can get. But what's going on in my life that I can't do that, you know? I just go home to my one-bedroom apartment and stare at the walls because now I can't even drink, you know? And you know, and it's just, I thought I knew how to do AA. And I thought I had all the answers when I came back in. I thought that, you know, you do the steps, you get a service position, and you get a home group and a sponsor. A, B, C, and D. And if you do that, you're guaranteed to stay sober, you know. And the truth is, you know, you have to actually, like, work the steps with some sort of purpose. You can't just do them like it's a homework assignment, which is what I was doing, you know. I treated AA like college, because that's what I knew. I knew how to go to school. I knew how to do assignments. I knew if I do this and turn it in, I get a grade. So if you tell me to do a four-step and I write down a bunch of stuff on a piece of paper and I turn it in, you'll tell me I'm doing a good job, and maybe one day I'll graduate from Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened was I did a fourth step and a fifth step, and I wasn't completely honest on it, and I wasn't even honest for the time. Like, I know I hear a lot of people say I was as honest as I could be, and I even used to say that, but the truth is I wasn't. There were things I kept off that I was afraid to share with anybody, you know, and that was keeping me very, very sick for a long time. What happened was I got, you know, and I came to this group. I made this my home group. I got a service position almost right away. I was the assistant butt man. They thought it was really funny because they called it ass butt. So they would call me ass butt, and they thought it was hysterical. And I was just like, ah, yeah, it's funny. Yeah, you know. And my job was I would follow around this. Well, my job was to make sure the actual butt man would actually pick up cigarette butts. And he was this 15-year-old who had a girlfriend who he would go and hang out with after the meeting. So my job was to make sure he got away from his girlfriend, and he would go and pick up the cigarette butts. So in return for that, he would slam me the entire time we were picking up cigarette butts. You know, and my ego is out of control. Like, I hit complete bottom, ready to kill myself. At the same time, I have this huge out of control ego, and you know, and he's slamming me like crazy. Like every time I complain about something, all he would say is, you know, I tell him my job. I think I'm going to get fired from my job. He's like, you should get fired. You're an alcoholic. You've destroyed your life with alcohol. You don't deserve anything. I was just like, it's like, who are you? Like, I was speechless. I was completely speechless. And I, you know, and my wife filed for divorce, and I was really, really down about it. And I told him, and he's like, yeah, she should. You know, he's like, and it was the same thing. He said, you're an alcoholic. You've destroyed your life with alcohol. You don't deserve anything, least of all a wife. He's like, what do you expect to happen? And I was just like, man, this is really harsh, you know? But really in my head, I'm thinking, who is this kid? I'm a 25-year-old man. He's barely out of high school, if at all. You know, I graduated from college. I have a degree, you know, and I'm in a master's program, by the way. I deserve some respect, you know, and that's really what I thought. I didn't deserve any respect. I was lucky to get any of that, and to be perfectly honest, I was flunking out of the master's program. You know, everything in my life I was destroying because I couldn't handle life at all, and he was right. I had destroyed my life with alcohol. I didn't deserve any of that, you know, and the only reason I had it was because I was lucky enough to hold on to it. And, boy, that's a humbling experience. And, you know, what happened was, you know, I was about 9 months sober, and I was barely hanging on. I was barely making it. And, you know, we were at the Riverside Academy, Youth Academy, I think it's called. And they, you know, and it's a lockdown facility, for those of you who have never been there. And what happens is they take you in, and you go into a room, and then they bring the kids in. And then you have a little meeting, and then you leave. And what happened this time was it took us to the room, and they never brought the kids in. Well, it's a lockdown facility. You just can't get up and leave. You have to wait for them to come back and get you. Well, they were expecting, I guess they were expecting to come back in an hour, even though they never brought the kids. So they made us sit there for an hour. And, you know, we're talking and, you know, gossiping or whatever. And then the conversation got around to me. And he's like, so what's going on with you? And I was like, I don't know. Not much, I guess. And he was like, you're right, you know. And this was the same kid who was slamming me. And he was like, you know, he's like, look, he said, we never see you around. No one knows what's going on with you. No one knows what you're doing, you know. And he's like, if you don't start taking this thing serious, and no, I'll never forget, he said, do you think if you drink, you're going to die? And at that time, I was pretty sure I would, because like I said, I thought I was going to go insane. So rather than deal with that, I probably would just end up killing myself. And I was like, yeah, I do. He's like, well, then why do you keep messing around with Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, why don't you start doing this thing the right way? And I didn't have any answer. You know, he was right. You can't deny the truth, you know. And so what ended up happening was, you know, I ended up getting a sponsor, and I, you know, and his philosophy was, if you want what I have, you'll do what I do. And it was that simple. He asked me, are you willing to follow direction? I was like, yeah, sure, I guess. Whatever, yeah. And he, you know, he went to a meeting every day, so I went to a meeting every day. And, you know, he was just starting to get more active in service and starting to do more with Alcoholics Anonymous, and he just kind of pulled me along with him, you know, and I was just kind of along for the ride. And, you know, those were crazy times. Like, I was probably about a year sober, and I guess, you know, and we started bidding for a conference. We got a conference. I was the chair. At 2 years sober, I'm the chair of this conference, you know, and things just started, the group just started growing exponentially. As time went on, the group got bigger and bigger and bigger, and, you know, we outgrew the church we were in, and now my sponsor and I, we kind of took the ball, and before we even had, because we're gonna get kicked out of the other church. We ended up finding this place, and you know, everything just started happening, you know, and it happened really fast, you know, and my life just got so much better, you know. It's hard to describe, but my life just got so much better, you know, and I went from being that guy who didn't want to be here, but I had nowhere else to go, to being that guy who was here, you know. I got a service position after I was asked butt man. I took over cleanup for the home group, I took over setup that turned into coffee, setup and coffee, which turned into setup, coffee, and cleanup, which turned into setup, coffee, cleanup, and literature. So I was like, because the literature guy got drunk, and I was hanging out at my sponsor's house, and he shows up with the bucket. He's like, here. He's like, what's going on? He's like, I'm going out of town, and you're not going to see me for a while, so here's the literature. And my sponsor was like, here, make sure this gets to the meeting. And so next thing you know, I got four different commitments at my home group, you know, and that made me feel like I was a member of that home group, you know. I was the guy there setting up the chairs, unlocking the church. I was the guy locking the church when we left. I was the guy making sure the coffee was on the table. Like, that made me feel like that was my home group. It went completely to my head, and I was like, this meeting wouldn't survive without me. It's a good thing I'm here to keep things in line, you know. But, you know, it was great. I loved it. I loved it. I complained about it all the time, but I loved it. You know, and, everything I have in my life today, I have because of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I can go down the list. My job, a guy told me if I got a job where he worked, that he would get a bonus if I stayed there for 6 months. And I needed a job. I was like, whatever, man. Sure. And I went and I did it. I've been there for 6 years. And, you know, I got promoted twice. Last year, they sent my wife and I to Miami because I was the top-ranked person who did my job in the entire country. And the only reason that is because of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not anything I did, you know. I remember when I got that promotion, I was so scared. I didn't even know how to do the job. They hired me and were going to train me to do the job. And I remember being so scared, and my sponsor just told me, be on time and ask lots of questions. And that's what I did, you know. And that's the only reason I was ranked number one, is because I was the one who was asking all the questions. Everyone else was afraid to ask questions because they didn't want to look bad. But I was like, I don't understand what you're talking about, you know. Can you explain this to me? And, you know, and it worked. It worked. And, you know, and my lovely wife is here with me tonight. This is the first time we've been able to come to this meeting together in 2 years because we have two children who take up a lot of our time these days, and we were bringing one of them here. My son, when he was first born, we would bring him here. But then he became that kid. He was like running around the meeting, screaming at the top of his lungs, and we decided it was probably a good idea to leave him at home. And then my wife just recently got a new home group, which meets on Thursday nights. So we don't get to make it out here as much as we would like. But, you know, she likes me to tell a story about how we started dating. And we, you know, I asked her out three times, and she actually, I think she said yes twice and stood me up both times. And the third time she said yes, and we actually went on a date. And, you know, and that was right around the time I was getting 2 years sober, and she had 4 months, and I hope that didn't get picked up by the recording, Terry. And I could tell you very honestly that we were both sponsored at the time. We both we didn't just have sponsors, we were being sponsored at the time, and it was really, really hard. Because we moved fast. We moved in together very quickly. We did everything very quickly. And we got engaged after a year. That's not what I meant, by the way. Protect my wife's honor from the podium. So we moved in together after, I'm sorry, we moved in together after like dating like 3 months, I think. Because I lost the place. I was living with a bunch of guys, and they all moved out of the place I was living in. So I was like the last one there. So I had to get out of the lease and find a new place. And we were in love, so we decided to move in together. And a year after we started dating, we got engaged, and a year later we got married. You know, and at our wedding was like, I made our wedding into the group hang. We because we came like. she went off to go to the hotel to get ready for the wedding, and I came to my home group that Thursday, and I handed out invitations to people at the home group. And I remember walking up to a new guy and being like, "Hey, I'm getting married this weekend. You want to come?" He's like, "I guess. Am I allowed to do that?" And I was like, "It's my wedding, man. I wasn't paying for it, you know?" And I was like, "You're going to go with that guy because that guy doesn't have a date. You're going to be his date." You know, and everybody was there. We had a blast. You know, my bachelor party, we had a men's meeting. We had meetings at the hotel before the wedding. And, I have to be honest, my wedding night, I went to an AA meeting while my wife was up in the wedding suite or whatever they call it. And it was awesome. It was a great time, you know. And then we got pregnant, we got married in April, and we got pregnant in November, I think. Yeah, November. And that was a blessing from God. I'll call it a blessing. And because we used to take all these trips, and we were driving back from one of those trips, and I got tired, and we pulled over to stay at a hotel, and 9 months later, my son was born. And, it was very, very stressful at first. I'm not going to lie, you know. And because I went from going to meetings every day and hanging out with my friends as late as I wanted, and, you know, just being as active as I could and trying to do as much AA as I could. And went from that to who's staying home with the baby. And it was just like, and people would tell me, "Your life's going to change when that baby comes." And I'd be like, "Yeah, sure it is. Maybe it did for you. It's not for me, you know." And oh my gosh. I am the king of you become what you judge, man. Because I would judge people for bringing their kids to meetings. And then I was the guy who brought their kids to meetings. And I even had someone come up to me after a meeting one time where my son was making a lot of noise and being like, "When your kid was making that noise, all I could hear in my head was, AA is no place for children." Because that's what I used to say all the time. You know, AA is no place for children. And there I am, you know. And then I would judge people because they would have kids and they couldn't get out to meetings. And I'd be like, "You know, what's wrong with you? Why can't you do that?" And now that's exactly where I am. You know, babysitters are expensive and I just can't get out as much as I want to, you know. But I wouldn't change anything. You know, I wouldn't change the life I have for anything. You know, after my son was born, people brought us house meetings. We were living at my in-laws' house because we were waiting for our house to be built. And people brought us meetings into the house, and it was amazing. You know, it was awesome. We had great meetings, and people would bring us food. People brought us dinner because we couldn't, you know. For me, having a kid is almost like a traumatic experience. Like, the first time is like, your life changes so drastically. It's like, I don't even know what to do. Like, I can't go grocery shopping. I can't even leave the house. This kid is crying all the time. I don't even know what to do. I was like at a complete loss. And my sponsors, I mean, kids, I'd call him up and he'd be like, "I don't know, man. I don't have experience with kids." I was like, "Well, I appreciate you being honest, but I'm going out of my mind here." And he's like, "Well, just do nice things for your wife." And I'd be like, "Oh, that makes sense, you know?" Or he'd be like, "You know, just try and help out more around the house." You know, I was living with my in-laws. Like, this is a nightmare. You know, I got a newborn. I'm living with my in-laws. Like, this is horrible. And he'd be like, "Well, just take out the trash or just do the dishes." And that's what I do stuff like that just to show gratitude. You know, but we had a house meeting the other night. It was really funny because we had that kid, and then we decided in a more rational manner to plan to have a second kid. Equally as much of a blessing, but a little more of a planned blessing. And so we just recently had my daughter March 26th. So she's like a little bit more than a month old. So once again, it's like, well, first off, you can't leave. We can't really get out much because of the first kid. And now we got to stay home, you know, and take care of the newborn. Needs more attention and stuff. So we're having house meetings at our house again. And, and some people came over the other night and I was kind of complaining, you know, and sharing and complaining about stuff. And my wife, My wife comes up to me after everyone left, and she says, "Are you okay?" It's like, "Yeah, I'm fine." And she's like, "You sound like kind of upset during the meeting. Is everything all right?" It's like, "Yeah, that's why I don't really like to share or get honest around you, because you kind of take these things really personally." And she's like, "And what she said?" Oh, she says, "Are you miserable?" And she said like that too, and I was like, "Oh my gosh! Like, what did I say?" You know, like, because I'm as far from miserable right now in my life as you can get. Like, I am so happy with my life and what I have. You know, of course, there's things I wish I could change. I wish I could see my friends more, for sure. You know, I wish that I could get out more. I wish I could go to more meetings. But, you know, that's just the cards. That's just the life I have today. But I wouldn't change it for anything. You know, and if I was to, and all of that, and I'm not saying these things, it sounds like I'm bragging, but I'm not saying this to brag. I'm saying this because this is what Alcoholics Anonymous gave me. You know, I heard a speaker say once that I owe everything I have to the change in my pockets to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is my story. I owe everything in my life today, and all the relationships I have, my job, any success I have, entirely to Alcoholics Anonymous. If it wasn't for this program, I wouldn't have anything. And we were joking about that on the way here. Like, if I were to go back out, what would happen? It would all be gone in an instant. I'd never forget that. I couldn't make a mortgage payment. I couldn't go to work. I wouldn't have a relationship with anybody in my life that I have today. It would all be gone like that. And I don't ever forget that, you know. So I think I'm done. Thanks, Blair, for asking me to speak.